going on, everybody? I'm Shadi.
Jason.
Stay in the man.
And this is Into the Combine. Jason, what do we got going on this week?
We have a very special episode for you guys today. We're going to do another one of our interview episodes. Today we have Brandon Cruz from the band So Hideous, talking a lot about their album that dropped this year called Loristine. Phenomenal, phenomenal album.
I really enjoyed talking to this guy. He had a lot to say, and I really enjoyed it. Cool dude.
Yeah.
Real talkative. I mean, kind of, you know, it was great that he, I hate to say he did the interview for us, but I mean,
he kind of did. I mean,
yeah. He was just, we didn't really have to force anything out of him. He was just happy to be talking to us.
Awesome. Some bands, you feel like you're pulling teeth to get answers from them, but this guy, you could tell he was very passionate about his band and this album and what he does.
Oh, yeah. Very, very passionate. And you hear it in the music as well.
Exactly. So. If you haven't heard of this band before, one, I would say just check this out, because I think it's an interesting conversation and what he has to say. He comes from a different kind of musical background than metal. He's got metal in his background, but he's trained in,
piano, composition,
classical
theory.
Music, yeah. Exactly. Classical music and just general music theory.
Just band nerd straight up.
Very intelligent.
Yeah.
For this new album that came out this year, he used a 30-person orchestra combined with him playing piano and guitar, another guitarist, and then, his brother doing vocals. And it's just a very interesting band. He composed all the music for the orchestra, wrote everything on piano. He'll tell you more about it, but just to give you guys an idea of why this is such an interesting band and why you should spend a little time on it. It's very hard to describe this band. They're kind of a genreless band.
Really hard to try to just lump them into some sort of a category.
The vocals are very abrasive, similar to a black metal kind of vocal, but everything else in it really steps outside that. It's got some of the double bass, but other than that, it's almost like you're listening to a movie score mixed with abrasive vocals. So we'll stop talking about it and we'll let you hear what Brandon had to say.
Enjoy, guys.
So yeah, we're here with Brandon Cruz from So Hideous. Thanks for being here with us.
No, thanks for having me.
Can you, just to start off, can you give us a little background about the band, what kind of music you guys play?
Yeah, cool. So I guess because we've all been friends, we've been playing in a lot of different bands, I guess our whole lives, basically. And, we kind of branched apart when the other guys went into a death metal band, and I started doing a lot of strings and drone and classical stuff. And the idea that I had in 2008 was to do kind of Baroque strings with some guy just losing his mind yelling over it. And then we gradually kind of extrapolated into it and started adding members and drums and guitar and distortion and blah, blah, blah. And We put out the first EP, but at the time it was me and a completely different lineup of guys in 2008. And then we did another EP a couple of years later. And then we initially self-released Last Poem, First Light in 2013. And then Prosthetic found out about us. So they re-released it the following year. And here we are now with the final lineup with me composing and playing guitar and my brother Chris on the vocals, Danny drumming, and Etienne on the rhythm guitar. And we've been like this now for about a few years, and we just dropped Lower Steam this year on Prosthetic. So that's our journey, and we're really excited about it. I guess I try to say we're really just loud chamber music. You know, I try not to get too in-depth after that with subgenres, because then people start expecting stuff from you. So, yeah, that's it. We're loud chamber soundtrack music.
Perfect. Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, how you would explain your band to someone who hadn't heard you. And I would say that's definitely a good explanation, because we were kind of talking about it beforehand, and it's kind of hard to classify. You can't really lump you guys in with the whole, you know, you got all these different names being thrown around right now with the, you know, black gaze and post-black metal, but I feel like you guys definitely set yourself apart from most of those bands.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's weird too, I guess, because, you know, this thing just, people started to just give it names as it happened. I mean, when people heard our first demos, they were calling us a screamo band with strings, and then we were just called a heavy post-rock band, and then in like 2011, the Wolves in the Throne Room stuff was big, so then all of a sudden, we became, and we didn't even change our sound, we just became an atmospheric black metal band, because people started calling us that, and then now it's all this black gay stuff, and, you know, it's just interesting, because I guess that's for the bloggers, and that's for, you know, the advertisers, and the label people, and, I mean, we don't care. We just want to play songs, you know, like that's really the extent of it. You know, we don't really have kind of this kinship with any certain scene. We've really, up until recently, been functioning outside of it. You know, we played on all these crazy bills until, you know, we were able to have any sort of reach with Prosthetic, and they were able to maybe streamline it to a certain audience. But even then, like, you know, who knows? The stuff we're writing for LP3 is, like, really weird and doesn't sound like this, so we'll see how it goes.
Right, yeah, you know, because whenever I've read a review so far of Lowerstein, which are generally very, very good, you know, I see a lot of high ratings, so congrats on that. But, you know, it's hard to find a review that doesn't mention a band like Death Heaven or, like, some of the bands you mentioned. But it seems like they never mentioned that you guys started in 2008, whereas most of those other bands came after you guys.
Yeah, it's definitely something that like in the band we've always been kind of scratching our heads about, and it's like, you know, it's not even in this sort of, you know, ego driven like, you know, put your chest out and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, because people were certainly barking up trees even before us, but, you know, ultimately it's just kind of like, hey, do your research. But I guess a lot of it has to do with, you know, certain criticisms now, that there really are no criteria anymore to be a journalist. You know, meanwhile, before you had to, I guess, make your bones writing for certain publications, blah, et cetera. Now it's just sort of anyone who can write and can upload to the internet or do anything like that can say their piece and essentially be either woefully unqualified or just unprofessional and not necessarily researched. So that's always bizarre when we hear we're influenced by so-and-so, and it's like, dude, like, not even. We didn't even know about half these bands until people started comparing us in the reviews, you know, but no one really, really mentioned, you know, until we started talking about it, like how indebted the compositions are to guys like Max Richter, who like basically taught me how to write chord progressions. Like, I mean, the way he composes for strings, so minimal, you know, he's not fucking around basically with scales and bullshit, but cuts right to the chase. And for me as a songwriter, when I'm putting these songs together, that was really what I wanted. It wasn't more about, you know, let's take this Kevin Shields reverb here and let's do, you know, this type of guitar stuff. It was, no, it's always about the feeling. So, but yeah, we're definitely in this camp. We're always kind of like wary of that sort of stuff. It's like, wait a minute, have they checked our discography? But, you know, it is what it is. We can just keep talking about it in interviews and, you know, hopefully someone reads another interview and figures it out.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know, Brandon. I mean, sorry, this is shoddy here now. But I don't, I mean, I agree with you. I don't necessarily know that people are doing their homework out there. But I mean, I guess now that we're on the topic, what are some of your influences? You know, like, I mean, I know that I've read before, I don't know if the people were correct, but they stated that a majority of your influences were kind of on the non-metal side of things. So I guess maybe how do you guys draw the metal in then? And then I guess, I mean, what do you listen to? You know, like, what drives you, I guess, as a musician?
Right. No, great question. I'd say, honestly, in the past 4 or 5 years or so, it's really been less and less metal and less guitar music. I think maybe for me, there was sort of like, I'm one of those guys that maybe go to like these really, really intense, like, two or three year listening periods or something where I really immerse myself into it and I kind of take what's useful and discard the rest and then, you know, sort of move on as I grow with my taste and still retain those elements. So, I mean, you know, for me, as a kid growing up, you know, it was a huge, you know, post-rock thing. Like, I mean, I was, you know, my formative years, even before my teenage years, there was, you know, a lot of Mogwai, a lot of Mono in the house, and, you know, even more, you know, I guess, stuff like Radiohead and a lot of those British bands at the time that were doing the quote-unquote, you know, weird stuff with electronic music and songwriting, like Primal Scream, Exterminator is one of my favorite records of all time because it's just loud, but disco at the same time. And recently, I've just really gotten into the composition stuff, man. Like, again, guys like Max Richter, Oliver Arnold, Oliver Arnold is he's an Icelandic composer, but he puts them with electronic music in a way that's just very minimal and haunting. And recently I've kind of been on this big electronic kick, you know, bands like Beacon, Chiasmos, they're using organic instruments, like strings inside of all of it, etc. But you know, they still have this rhythmic interplay that I'm getting into. As far as, like, the loud stuff, I haven't really, again, recently kind of moved beyond the stuff. Like, I mean, you know, Envy is one of my favorite bands of all time. They always have been. They probably always will be. So I guess maybe the fact that I was listening to, like, a lot of Funeral Doom in college kind of moved together with that. Like Envy mixed with, like, someone like Nort, who's playing songs at, like, 5 BPMs. And it's like only minor key, but the atmosphere was great because the vocals were just, you know, really, really pushed back, and there's still songwriting. It's dark, but you didn't necessarily have, you know, the bells and whistles of these, you know, technical guys jerking off and trying to do, you know, blast beats at 320 BPMs and all that kind of stuff. You know, like, it's like that stuff doesn't, you know, it's impressive. And I mean, especially our drummer, because we've had a few drummers, and when we got Danny, it really opened up a whole different world of possibilities from the first TPs because, you know, he was able to do all that kind of stuff. But, you know, for us, we had to kind of circle back and say, okay, now the cliche for everyone to do is have their soft post part where someone's doing halftime, and then it gets intense and you start blast beating, and then it goes back into halftime for the big finish. And for us, it was more like, well, this guy can do these rapid double kicks and be insane, but how do we take from different styles of music, like let's say classical music, and especially on Lauristin, really, really abusing the toms, like on that record. That was like my mantra. Like, everybody else in this post shit is going to use the snare. Let's abuse these toms like the classical guys, have them be big. So we're still rooted in that rhythmic metal attitude, but not necessarily, I'd say, you know, steeped in the milieu of taking all the tropes that they need all the time. I think maybe we're more like punk rock metal in attitude, but less in what we take from it and use all the time.
Yeah, and I really, really like what I've been hearing so far. It's funny that you mentioned the whole tom thing, because at times when I listen, it kind of sounds like a timpani section kind of in like a concert band, which leads me, I guess, to my next question. Is I know that you do a majority of your composing on the piano, And then you guys mess around with these time signatures. You brought up, you know, the abusing of the toms. You also abused the time signature, how it fluctuates. Is there any musical training that you have or any of the members have? I mean, I guess, how did you learn to, you know, compose on the piano?
The piano stuff was kind of, a combination. Like I actually, even though I play guitar in this band, in my life, I don't consider myself a guitar player. Like, I get the sounds that Sir Hideous needs, you know, and I enjoy that specific guitar playing, but I'm not really someone who enjoys the instrument that much. Like, I'm more into, again, you know, piano, strings, brass, all that kind of stuff. So for me growing up, you know, I was in concert bands and, you know, getting piano lessons and learning notation and all that kind of stuff. And then you continue it, you know, in college and, you know, you start working towards getting a composition degree and all that stuff. And, but at the same time, when you're working with four guys, the only way we could really approximate having, you know, getting that big symphonic sound is without the, you know, recordings or huge ensembles is, you know, let's step on those distortion pedals, guys. That was really like, you know, the closest approximation we could get without it, you know, becoming like this really like, you know, like over the top cheesy, you know, factory synth strings. You know, it was more about, you know, how can we harness that energy of this huge symphonic thing? And, you know, with all of us, but back to, you know, the piano stuff and the time signature stuff, I think the good thing about kind of, having public releases, oh, my dog's going crazy. The good thing about having, you know, these releases is that you are trying to top yourself, you know, and you are trying in a lot of ways to explore different avenues that you haven't before. And this was the first record that we could actually see through to completion, unfortunately. All the other ones really ran out of time and money. You know, even Last Poem, we put a Kickstarter together, you know, but it was ultimately self-released. We had to leave a couple of songs off the record that still haven't even been released, because we just couldn't record it with the strings and do it justice with the mixing. So Lorestein was the first one that it was like, let's take 2 years, let's write it. We have the concept for it. You know, I came up with, you know, in my research, all that 7 minutes of brain activity stuff. And I was like, wouldn't it be great if we just added it into the fabric of the songs? Like, kind of like, you know, if this guy's mind is collapsing while he's dying, then the sensory landscape gets a little bit unstable. And we represent that with dropping the time signatures. And definitely at first, it was a pain in the ass. It really wasn't, you know, natural, because we had to figure out a way to get out of our rhythmic comfort zone, which kind of has, you know, a lot of the groovy drumming on top of the double kick. And it was more like, okay, how do we do this and make it feel disorienting, but at the same time, not so jarring that it just takes you completely out of the recording. You know, there's nothing worse than that, than you go in there and it's just like, well, why the fuck did they do that? You know, we were trying to find the happy medium with sticking to the concept and, you know, doing it justice and still being listenable.
Brandon, this is Stan here. You touched on like a little bit of how you wrote the music for the last album and stuff, but I would like to ask you a little bit about the production wise. I see that you guys recorded over at Wild Arctic Recording Studio. And I guess what was the reason for picking that place, and kind of explain how you went about recording a 30-plus person orchestra?
Oh, no, great. Thank you. Again, great questions, and I'm not, like, kissing ass. Like, it's very rare that I do interviews and people are talking about music and not talking about just fucking black metal, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
But, we recorded, well, I, because there were, I didn't have any band members on the first EP, in 2008 with Dean Balsalonis, who runs the Wild Arctic, back when he was in New York. And it was an immediate rapport, because he's fantastic and he's the exact opposite of me in the studio. I'm a basket case and I'm a pain in the ass and I'm stressing out Brian Wilson over everything that's not necessary. And he's so even-tempered, and I was like, okay, let's give it another pass, even though he knows we already nailed it. But, you know, he humors me in that way. And I think, too, because he's done so many different records, like, I mean, he's done, you know, like, hardcore records, and then he's done singer-songwriter pop records, and then he did, like, Danny Diablo, which is, like, a hip-hop record, and then Bold Steady, which is, like, Springsteen Light. You know, he had just a very, very diverse sound, and I liked his drum room. And so we did the first two EPs with him, and then by the time Last Poem came, he took his operations in New Hampshire, which is great because his studio was in, like, basically this huge house kind of estate, and the band can stay in the building and the whole bottom, I mean, in the house, and the whole bottom floor is the studio, and, you know, there's a kitchen. It was just a great place to actually go away for a week and get everything done. So Last Poem was great, but we didn't really have the money, so we were kind of pressed for time. And on that one, we only had, I think, we had 14 people. And on this one, I actually, on Laura Scene, I wanted to do 50, but that wasn't in the budget. So we had to pare it down to 30. The way we usually go about it is, you know, we make sure we have the songs really, really tight. I mean, and we kind of really binge rehearse, I want to say 6 to 8 months before we start going hard, like 4 or 5 nights a week, getting it together, because it's real easy. Like, I can play the whole record from start to finish on piano, but then when we get together and have the nuances about who's taking rhythm, who's taking leads, all that kind of stuff, that's when it gets complex. So we make sure we were really, really tight before going in, and then we drive the 4 hours to New Hampshire. We track everything first. We track, I record to the click tracks that I have programmed, the piano version of the record. Then, drums go over it, and then we start layering everything. Luckily for this time, Last Poem, we had to wait 6 months to pay for the orchestra. So we were sitting on the record, the punk band version of just the guitar, bass, drum, for half a year. Just like, when is this thing going to come out? Because we had to keep saving for the orchestra. Lorestein, we had the money in advance. So we mixed the band version. The following weekend, we met up with the orchestra. We recorded them in the city at a performance space called Littlefield. And that was great because, to be very frank, I don't think I've worked harder on anything than I did to make the orchestrations work on this record, because the sheet music, quite frankly, is a pain in the ass. And to do it for an ensemble of this size, where we wanted to do Lorestein a little bit different. Like, Last Poem was definitely more rooted in kind of rock and roll and punk. You know, this one, it was more like, no, I wanted it to be a chamber record. I wanted it to be more ambient. I wanted it to be more washed out, you know, and not necessarily care too much about the blistering metal stuff. I wanted it to sound more like the reason we began the band. This is a guy screaming over strings, and yeah, it's a little edgier. It's more abrasive, but, you know, kind of take out the, we didn't want too many people to claim us, I think. Well, like before, it was like, oh, this is post-hardcore, this is screamo. And it's like, well, just take it for what it is. But, yeah, I'm not going to lie. It was definitely really, really daunting to write for that many people, because every record, it was like the first EP was a string duo, then the class was a quartet, and then the last one was 14 people. And then by the time this one came around, I had a 16-piece string section, 10 people for the choir, and 4 for the brass. And we only had one day to really knock that out in the budget. So that was, you know, we were kind of cycling them out. It was just like, okay, this song's done, let's run through that path. And so that they're not turning pages, we recorded in 30-second clips. So it's like, okay, let's get the intro of the song, stop, punch this part in, and we just kept, you know, punching it in like so. So yeah, it was really, really stressful, and then it was done, and it was like, okay, good. We could release the record actually without the band, and it would sound just as good. So that was a good feeling.
Right. So one last question we wanted to get in before we finish here. You mentioned a little bit about LP3. I know you probably guys haven't really started thinking hard on that, but can you give us any type of indication of what it's going to sound like, or what you're at least hoping for or planning for that one?
Yeah, definitely. So we actually, it was funny because I was with the drummer a couple of days ago, Danny, and we were working on a couple of new ideas I have. Like, it's really hard to put into words without sounding crazy, because we want to do what we do better, but ultimately I think this record is going to be a lot more rhythmic, you know, and not necessarily you know, in a metal kind of way, especially because I've been listening to a lot more electronic music. So I don't think it's going to be as epic. We talked about kind of pairing stuff down a little bit, but using different instruments. Like, you know, we're writing one track for, you know, a Japanese koto. I was like, that's going to sound interesting, but it's just fun to do that kind of stuff. And so it's going to be more dissonant in places, but not necessarily like a Penderecki ugliness. We're thinking more of like not necessarily separating what's beautiful and ugly anymore. Like, I always think about 2001 Space Odyssey, right? Space is beautiful and it's vast, but it's fucking terrifying. And all those Xenakis, you know, scores with the guys going, yeah, you know, it's unnerving. And the idea of kind of opening up the language to that kind of stuff instead of having it be, this is Rising on Last Poem. This sounds a little bit darker and more evil. Or this is Glory, or this is, you know, this sounds more like Beethoven in church. Kind of not having the lines be as blurred. And we're actually fucking around with, like, Middle Eastern scales and shit like that. So it's going to be a dance album with digital Baroque strings with a guy yelling over it.
It sounds awesome. Super interesting to hear about the whole process. You're a super interesting dude. And we would just all want to thank you a lot for taking the time out to talk about this album and your band with us.
No, man. I want to thank you guys for, you know, giving me the opportunity to prattle on about this stuff. You know, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much, Brandon. Take care, man.
Thanks, Brandon.
Take care, guys. Thank you.
Well, again, we want to thank you guys for listening, and we want to give a special thanks again to Brandon Cruz for taking time out of his weekend to do that interview with us. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you guys enjoy listening to the album when you get a chance to, now that you've heard, you know, a little bit more of why, I guess, or, you know, what Brandon's thinking when he sits down and composes his music.
If you guys have any other bands you guys want to hear an interview from, you know, always shoot us a recommendation. We love hearing about new bands, and we're trying to keep things progressive with our interviews and just check out these bands that are doing something different and are interesting.
And we'll post some links to the songs you heard, and just check out his band. It's really cool. So,
one more time, that was So Hideous, and the newest album that came out this year was Lorestein. Thank you, guys. This was another episode of Into the Combine. I am Shoddy.
Jason.
Stan the Man.
Stay metal.